Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is Jane. I wrote a funny headline for the show. It's called "Whatever Happened to Singapore Mike? He fell off the radar. Perhaps he's in cahoots with Ed Snowden." Tonight we have Albert and John Yoder on the line. Don is at large, but he said he'd be calling in. I'm going to play a short clip from NPR on how Donald Trump's national security team briefed Congress on the Iranian situation.
"I briefed the House on Iran, and he spoke to members as they came out. Hey there, Tom.
Hey, Artie.
So we just heard from Congressman Gallego. What else did you hear on the Hill today?"
"Well, it was really a mixed reaction, somewhat partisan. Besides Congressman Gallego, what he had to say, Democratic Congressman Adam Smith, chair of the Armed Services Committee, was not all that convinced by the briefing by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Here's Congressman Smith.
"Secretary Pompeo made a very lengthy political argument. He argued, you know, here's all the terrible things that Iran had done," and he spent about 10 minutes until I cut him off, making it arguments. And as every member who stood up said, "We know Iran is bad. Okay, what is the policy going forward?"
And as he said, they got no reaction to the policy going forward. And other Democrats at the administration was kind of spinning all of this, that the threats were not all that new. But then you have Republican Congressman Mac Thornberry of Texas. He's worried. He said Iran is clearly ramping things up. Let's listen.
This is different. What has happened more recently is different. And obviously that is what precipitated movement of military forces to make it clear to Iran that if they attack Americans, there will be consequences.
So again, Democrats are generally, we're not all that surprised by what they heard and indicated this is kind of old stuff. Republicans said, no, it's a new threat from Iran, and the intelligence bears that out.
Did members of either party offer much detail about what they heard?
No, of course, it's all classified, so there's some bits and pieces I've been able to pick up over the past week or so. They wouldn't get into that. Now, two military officials I spoke with previously said it is serious. The Iranian leadership has sent word to its Revolutionary Guard Corps to reach out to its proxies and attack the U.S. and its allies. These guys said it's pretty serious. Now, Shanahan, the acting defense secretary, said the U.S. presence with the carriers and bombers sent to the Gulf actually thwarted attacks by Iranian proxies. He said Iran put them on hold, his words. And I'm told there was a threat to U.S. troops and facilities in Iraq. That was a specific threat, and now it is no more. Here's the other thing. As far as the attacks, the recent attacks on oil tankers in the Gulf, as well as that attack on the Saudi pipeline by the Houthi rebels, some members said it was clearly Iranian proxies. That's what they heard in the hearing. But even Secretary Pompeo was not willing to go that far. He said in an interview this morning, there's no definitive conclusion that Iran was behind it, and it's, quote, quite possible Iran was behind these. So even the Secretary of State isn't willing to say 100% Iran did that.
At this point, what does all this mean for U.S. policy?
Well, no one knows, as Congressman Adam Smith said. Where is this going? They're worried about miscalculation, either from the U.S. or Iran. A shooting war could begin. And as Congressman Smith said, what's the objective here? Is it regime change, getting Iran to change its behavior? Where do you see this going? And as he said, there's no sense of anything going forward. And he said, if anything, Iran seems more eager to restart their nuclear program.
That's NPR's Tom Bowman. Tom, thank you.
You're welcome.
It does seem like a legitimate threat, and we should be slightly worried because Iran is kind of like the Holy Grail. It's like the last country that, I would say that of all the countries of the Middle East, it's the one that we can trust the least. And they have the least amount to lose because they've already been a fringe Middle Eastern country with bad relations with Western European countries and the United States. However, certain Western European countries, including Russia, Eastern Russia, has reached out and have had a long-term relationship with Iran. But we are continuing that discussion tonight. We're also going to be talking about our world views on the world and what a threat by Iran means, because they have flanking Iraq and going through a 10-year war in which 500,000 soldiers on each side died over a course of years from 1970 to 1980, Iran hasn't made that much noise except for their basic disagreement with U.S. policy in general. And we will turn the baton over to my co-hosts. Now, Don did manage to call in tonight. For Albert and Don, John and I did get into a major philosophical cleavage, only to be waged in moderation by Wade. And John can describe that, so I'll pull him in first. Good evening, John. How are you doing tonight? I'm going to have you describe what our conflict was last night and how we're going to segue that into our current episode.
Greetings, Purple Jane. How's your eye doing?
It's doing better now that I rested the hour.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, you wanna definitely take care of head trauma. That's for sure.
Yes.
I'll
tell the guys about that in the last 5 minutes of the show.
Okay. Yes, we had a discussion and we talked a bit about Iran. And I kind of jumped into Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, just about how the things that they say are pretty inflammatory, and that we just can't trust Islamic a strong Islamic presence, I guess you could put it that way. And Jane said, "Well, am I really basically not paranoid, but just kind of suspicious of all Islamic Muslim believers, especially in a majority Muslim ruled country?" And to a certain degree, I said, "Yes." I said, "Now, not of all Muslim people. 99% are friendly, loving, and just regular citizens like you and me, and they do their thing to live life. However, the government that they're under, their end objective is to basically have jihad and then take over a country." And then that's where kind of things really fell out a bit. And I kind of just stated, if you went into Iran and tried to have this kind of platform, bring a few people that are counter to the faith, that you would be taken down. And then I did a little research afterwards, and basically regarding Christians, 7 of the 10 most dangerous countries to be in are Iran and Sudan, Niger, and so forth. Basically Islamic countries. The only other countries that were as dangerous are North Korea, because of Kim Jong-un, and India, because they have very radicalized Hindus. And they're another country I never, ever heard of. But basically, that was my thought, was just that when you go to these countries under Sharia law, you're at risk. If you're a Christian, and 11 people a day get killed, basically, in these regimes. And it wasn't a safe place. I guess I would balance it by saying, like,
I'm going to pull it. Oh, sorry. Go ahead and finish. I'm going to pull them in a minute.
Well, I was looking more from a common sense, logical point. In other words, Jane's sister wanted to be a missionary. And basically, if I and her and some friends went over to these countries and just started preaching the gospel, we would find our lives in danger. Here's kind of the most important thing. In our country, we're Christian and nice and friendly. People can wear hijabs and burqas and whatever. They can run for Congress. They can voice their platform. And we're, basically we accept that. But if I were to go into those countries and take a Western woman and have her dress with low cut outfit and a skirt and high heels, makeup, and carrying an alcoholic drink in her hand and walk into a mosque, we would not be treated the same way. Our lives would be in danger.
And I was trying to explain to John that I was talking about, just from a political scientist standpoint, I'm only worried about keeping Iran at bay and not making them a geopolitical threat in the region and a threat to the United States. But I was trying to explain to him that the perception is off on both sides, because we have a history with Iran. We overthrew their democratic elect government in 1953. We helped fuel and funnel the war, which killed over 1 million people in the Middle East between the Iran-Iraq war. We single-handedly killed 250,000 Iraqi citizens and children during both Bush wars. So with that, I'll bring in Albert and Don for their opinion. Good evening, Albert. How's it going?
Hey, well, what's up? Chilling, hanging out.
Good. Don seemed to have missed the show last night, but Don, I didn't understand what you were trying to tell me this morning. Good evening, Don.
Hello there, Dane. Hello, everyone. So, I missed one show out of 4 years, and I get ostracized. Okay, that's how it goes.
You weren't ostracized, but you called me this morning and you hung up on me before you even got a sentence out.
No, my phone died. And that was what happened this morning. I didn't plug in my phone last night.
It's okay. You were probably eating ice cream and sleeping.
Yes, I was. So, that's all the same with apologizing, because I did miss a show.
By the way, so has Albert or Don been paying attention to these pending threats in the Persian Gulf, and should the United States have sent an aircraft carrier that quickly?
Okay.
We don't
Albert.
Have time for blank stares. We only have 30 minutes left.
Yeah, no. I mean, what we do, with, we should have a base, and that's the purpose for us staying in Afghanistan and all the other places that we're in right now. We lost some bases during the Iran conflict and some of the other conflicts in the Middle East. We closed some bases, so we needed to strategically open up other bases. And Iraq was ideal because it's right there. And we really do kind of have Saudi Arabia, but they're laughing at us and stabbing us in the back. But nobody cares because they have all that oil and oil money. But we really do have no one we can fight in the Middle East. And we need a war that would jack up Boeing, Lockheed, Honeywell, and all the other corporations that would just rape us because in the name of defense. We're already getting raped on everything else, including, you know, prescription drugs and drug companies. The education department is just sieving up money, just vacuuming it, hoovering it down. And they're all keeping it for themselves. So in order to really get this country going, we need a good, strong, healthy war. And we're not going to do it in Venezuela, but we would do it indirectly, because Venezuela is one of Iran's biggest oil customers. So we're, you know, this is a kind of a real cluster about what is really going on. Iran, for all intents and purposes, is pulling a North Korea, and they simply want attention. They don't have the capability, even though I saw today that they're enriching more uranium than the treaty allows. But, of course, Donald Trump has denounced the treaty. So, you know, we're looking for a war. We're looking for a fight. We haven't had one, not really in a long time.
I don't think even military advisors really don't want that direct confrontation with Iran. They really would like to avoid that.
Well,
whatever.
You know,
let them tell you that in their face. But that's their job.
Let Albert say something now, please.
I know, but I'm just saying that's their job. The military generals, that's their, the Pentagon, their job is war. That's what we pay them for. So they need to find a war.
Yeah, and we also pay the lobby around, you know, and politics and whatnot to increase our budget, military spending and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons our military budget is so huge. And, of course, you know, once you got a hammer, you know, if you find a problem, it's just going to look like a nail, and you have another reason to use your hammer. So, you know.
It's not like they're going out there researching, like a Google assistant, where should we attack next?
That's because you're not a strategist, Jane. You have no clue what goes on in the end game. And the end game, if you don't have an end game, then you're just kind of floundering around, throwing bombs and getting people killed by moving them around in the wrong places. You know, it's a strategy to how you commit war, and let the strategists strategize, and you just sit back and talk.
An organization called the NIA Council, the National Iranian American Council, has this to say: Time is running out. Trump alongside Iraq war architect John Bolton and his cabal of hawks are doing everything in their power to stoke a war with Iran. The Trump administration has threatened Iran with unrelenting force and imposed new sanctions designed to punish ordinary Iranians, making it even more imperative that we act now. We are working closely with our allies and friends in Congress to advance legislation that would block an unauthorized war with Iran. With the situation growing more dangerous by the day, it is vital that we make our voices heard and demand officials block Trump's path to war. So I'll pivot this question to John or Albert. Do you think Trump might be inflating this crisis to preserve his political longevity?
Well, actually, I would disagree, because if you look at it, we've been hearing all this time that Trump is Putin's bitch and that he's in his pocket. And here we have U.S. and Russian fighter jets facing off over Alaska. Trump's philosophy isn't to have wars all over the place. That was the Obama, Bush, Clinton scenario. Trump wants us out of these wars. He wants to build a big hammer. Well, hear me out. A big hammer so no one even thinks about screwing with us and making deals like with Kim Jong-un and other people to do business, like set up deals. Let's get, some hotels.
I don't think it's fair that you said that the Bush and Obama's – Obama inherited two wars. And you're right. George Sr. started the Gulf War because – he wanted to protect Kuwait, but technically Kuwait was a British wealthy outpost. They were just pissed off that Iraqis were crossing the border during an economic crisis. But
the sacred Obama said he'd get us out of there in a few years. And it took Donald Trump 2 years to get us out of there, wrap things up, get ISIS, and get out. He did it. He promises made, promises kept. Obama would have us in there as long as he could, till his kids can be president. I guess you have to wonder, though, do you believe that Donald Trump is going to win a re-election? Do you think there's a deep state? Or do you think he's just part of the cabal of central banks and war hawks who want to create war all over the world? Or do you think he really wants to have everyone economically strong and independent of the central bank? What do you think,
John? Well, John, that's what I was talking about. Donald Trump essentially is a miscreant. He's on the outside of the cabal looking in. He wants to join. He's pounding on the door and looking through the peephole, but they won't let him in. And that's the problem. His egotistical narcissism won't allow him to step back, make his own cabal or whatever needs to be done. He insists on joining the good old boys, and they won't let him in. And that's the problem.
Also, just so you know what the provocating moment was, is that the United States Embassy in Baghdad, which is heavily fortified, received an attack, a rocket from the eastern side of Baghdad, which is home to several Iranian-backed Shiite militias. So that was a sterling moment that created this mess.
The rocket missed. It was not.
I know, but it still came apparently from an eastern Baghdad section that houses several Iranian-backed Shia militias.
Right.
Now, this is just speculation. It's not verbatim truth. Well, Iran knows it can't win a war with us, but I still think it was wrong for Trump to say that never threaten us again or it's going to be the end of you. And he also softened his tone a little bit by today saying that he hopes that we don't get involved in a conflict.
Yeah, well,
and the State Department ordered all non-essential staff to leave Iraq. That's great.
But you got the one thing, John. Made. Yeah, well, they're all based on lies, though, John. That's the problem. He's keeping some of his promises, but the basis of his arguments or his positions are based on fallacies and lies that he's been proposing himself, including...
Wouldn't call it lies. I would call it a misdirection, because Trump often blurts things out thinking that it's... No, I'm not meant to say in this in a twisted way, but his own version of the truth is what he thinks he's spouting. Sometimes he puts the cart before the horse. He's probably not aware how complicated the relationship is and the history of the Iranian people with the United States.
Do you think that the press is unbiased, or is 90% slanted Democratic liberal? And also, do you think that there's going to be any investigations of Comey, Loretta Lynch, McCabe, Baker?
Okay, why are you changing the subject?
I hope they put all those white pieces of shit in jail.
I hope that Al Jazeera takes prominence in the worldwide media, because they're capable of telling the truth about the Middle East.
Okay, the reason I brought that up is because the people who have been leaking all that stuff, it's like the CNN, Washington Post, New York Times, those people are also going to get busted, and they're the ones who are gaslighting Trump is Putin's, you know, puppet, and he's Trump is, you know, he's a misogynist, he's a racist,
But that's the playbook of the white politician. The white leader goes in and he wants to provoke violence and war so that he can bring the legal forces in and make it look like it's legitimate. That's how they work.
Well,
I know.
Trump, now here's a question. Trump's been a, you know, somewhat successful business guy. He's the comeback king. He was billions in debt, which he admits actually on the Apprentice. He stated that several times. It wasn't a breaking story, and he also was called the comeback king by the New York Times because he turned it all around. The question is, if he's got money and he's got all these towers everywhere, why does he need to get in with the cabal? You know, he says he's going to drain the swamp. Isn't that what he's been doing, getting rid of FBI and CIA people and outing
but
people?
Those are the people he brought in.
You guys give Albert a chance, too. I'm going to step aside for a minute.
He's getting rid of his own swamp. Half of those people are people he brought in. Stop.
But, you
know, see that?
FBI Secret Service. I mean, it's growing. They're getting more employees, and they're definitely, you know, they're definitely ramp it up. Just took a how busy the Secret Service has been. During the last week, right now, the Venezuela embassy, were being arrested. The people that worked there, that were going there, were being arrested when they were trying to deliver food to the people inside. There were other protesters against Venezuela, you know, there were other protesters supporting the Venezuela, especially the embassy. And so the CIA didn't arrest any of the other supporters, only arrested the supporters. The support the embassy of Venezuela, and that was been going on for a week. Although now it's been shut down, and the Secret Service has gone inside and shut down the Venezuela embassy and arrested everybody that was still there supporting the one, except for the other group that was against Venezuela and their corrupt government. Kind of weird, right? I mean, they're only arresting one certain type of group, right? That kind of stuff would never happen to the Saudi Arabia embassy. In fact, the Saudi Arabia embassy can't even get close to it because it's super heavily guarded and heavily protected. You can't even you can't even get within a quarter mile of distance of the Saudi Arabia embassy without getting past the security, heavily security, you know. But, you know, that's the Saudi Arabia embassy, right? But the Venezuela embassy, it's you know, it's all open doors to come in and, you know, bust the door down. In fact, during the week ago, when the Secret Service was there, they did nothing against the other protesters that were against it, right? They went in there. In fact, they broke down the door, and they barricaded the other doors so the workers won't be able to get in and, you know, have their meetings. So they barricaded and were not allowing any food to come in. And like I said, you know, in fact, the people were there were trying to deliver food were being arrested by the Secret Service. So, you know, this is something to think about.
Well, I guess going to Don, a very good point. Do you think that what's happening with Iran? Now, they for years have been kind of trying to beef up their ability to go nuclear, and it's kind of like watching a neighbor, or, you know, kind of build like doing some stuff in the backyard, and you're wondering like, what are they doing? Oh, like they're building like a launcher. And they got a whole bunch of guns, and they get drunk on the weekends. They're kind of crazy guys. Stay away from them. And I was telling Jen earlier, I said, Trump's like the guy going, hey, what are you doing over there? It's like, wait a second, what are you doing? And he's questioning them straight up, and he's going, listen, I got a bigger gun than you. You need to put it down. Now, I do question that I mean, it seems like Iran, like any other country, has the right to do whatever they want to do, if they want to have nukes or do whatever. But for some reason, we have this balance where they can't have them, and certain other countries can't have them, just us and the Soviets and China and a couple of maybe India, maybe Israel. But the question is, the approach of just letting them do their own thing doesn't seem to work. He's actually confronting them and saying, I'm going to do sanctions. I'm going to send my big guns over there. If you want to go for it, you will be obliterated. That's kind of a bully approach. To tell you the truth, I like the bully approach. I'm tired of people just walking all over us and ignoring us. Do you think that they would stop their program if Hillary Clinton was president? What do you think, Don?
No. Hell no. You got to understand something. In that scenario, the drunken man in his backyard with all the guns, if the FBI came on his property and said, give me your guns and we're going to arrest you, he'll pick up his guns, all the hand grenades he can, pull the pins, and blow everything up. That's how that works. You know, you're talking about jihad, jihadism, and, you know, the things that they espouse in Islam or in Muslim, It's for the virtue of the victory. They want to be victorious. They don't care about if they live or not. They're looking at 76, 73 virgins waiting for them
right
at the gate.
So I don't think that's the mentality of all of them, but I definitely think that they have a mindset that the U.S. is the enemy.
We're talking just about jihadists. We're talking about the most extreme.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
Wait. But let's talk about the ones that just want revenge, the ones that get bombed every day. Because, I mean, you know, when you talk about, you know, the U.S., you know, campaign on the bombing, you know, they got drones flying there every day, and they're bombing practically every day on average. So, I mean, if you live there, and let's just say you were not part of the war, you were just a regular civilian, and your daughter's son or your wife or your family got bombed, you know what I mean? Would you join ISIS and try to kill some Americans? Yeah,
that's who members of ISIS is. We had a show on about a year ago or so about the prison. What was that prison? I forgot. Belfry, the prison that was in Iraq, where all the prisoners went and they began forming ISIS. You know, these when you go to when you send a concentrated number of people, of like-minded people, and have them do just what you know, live how they live, just like you said, where their families were getting bombed on a daily basis, they're going to form a coalition to try to get back exactly
exactly
people the original offense.
White recruiting becomes very easy.
Right. And we've been exploiting the Middle East through the petrodollar and through the wars, like looking for weapons of mass destruction. I'm totally hip to that. You know, the Bushes were just notorious for working with Saudi Arabia. And, you know, I'm sure we've done a few deals with Israel. But here's the question I ask, though. You have a group of people that underlying philosophy is that we are Satan, we're evil, that Islam is submission. You must submit. This isn't an optional thing. Eventually, you will have to submit to Allah. And so the question is, do we allow any group to just build nukes and that have no permanent plan of coexisting with Israel and with America? Or do we let it happen, or do we step up?
I don't know
and,
if we allowed it. It just happened. And now we have to deal with the situation.
Well, we have the intelligence, so we see it happening. So whether we like it or not, they're going to do it. So the question is, do we have the right to step in there and say, no, let's keep global peace? Or do we just let them become to the point where they can say, listen, we're going to start launching, give us this, give us that. We don't like Israel. We want the Palestine to have their own state in Israel, whether they want it or not. What do we do?
Well, just from a counterpoint point of view, does the United States have the right to cross international waters, the Strait of Hormuz, through the mouth of the Persian Gulf, and dominate that region when our country is nowhere in that hemisphere? Because General Hassan Salami was quoted Sunday saying Iran is not looking for war, but he thinks that the United States at this time are currently frustrated and looking for a way out of the current situation.
I think after 9/11, everything's on the table, although we were looking for Al-Qaeda, not Iraq. So that was a mistake. But I will tell you, living in L.A., especially West L.A., Beverly Hills, I have a lot of people that I've worked with over the years in different companies who are Persian Jews who came from Iran during the time of the Ayatollah. And they can tell you, you know, I asked them, will you ever go back? They said, we can't go back. They'll kill us. Our life is over. We ran with everything in Hachako because we're Jews. I live in Beverly Hills. I live off of, you know, Robertson and those areas. I played at a couple of the synagogues there for some of their events. And I'm telling you, they love America. And they love what Trump's doing. You know, they love that he made Jerusalem he restored Jerusalem what it was instead of Tel Aviv. And they love that we're pro helping them. Now, I think with 9/11, I think some of this works with not just the terrorists, I think also with perhaps some Zionists and probably a little bit of our government, CIA. I'm sure that's going to start coming out. Trump is looking into that. So we're going to see some crazy things from Hillary's server, her emails and things. This is being investigated by Barr. And that's because there's a lot of heat on them. A lot of people are going to be exposed.
I don't think Hillary's server has nothing to do with the conflict in the Middle East.
When you delete and break things up intentionally, you're hiding stuff. Her servers, they're running guns in Benghazi.
Did Jane really just ask that she didn't think Hillary had anything to do with the Middle East?
I said her deleted emails have nothing to do with this current topic. Of Iran being hostile to the United States.
Let me back up a minute.
There's weights on. You've been talking all night.
So
places like Jordan and Oman, And even a lot of the citizens of Bahrain, they don't have direct hostility to the United States. But Iran is a powder cake. They despise the United States.
I think they want nothing to do with it. Do you think when we gave $1.3 billion in cash to Iran, do you think none of that went to terrorism? Have you been following what's going to be released? The only reason this hasn't gone out for 2 years is Donald Trump would be accused of interfering with Mueller's report. That is done.
It might have gone to terrorism, but technically, did you know that we seized millions of dollars of assets after the Shah of Iran left office and Khomeini took over?
Oh, yes.
And Barack Obama leveraged a deal with the Iranians, and that's why he gave them some of their money back.
Barack Obama leveraged a lot of deals and a lot of illegal surveillance, 10,700 FISAs. And you're going to find out that a lot of them weren't clean, just as the four we know about, the dirty FISA with the dirty
dossier. That's never going to happen, John, as long as I live. But Armageddon will happen, and I can mark my words, we're in the beginning of Armageddon right now. If we start messing with Iran, it's the beginning of the end.
You know, in Armageddon, people are being beheaded. What countries behead people in our current planet? Muslim countries behead people.
All Trump does is piss people off. He doesn't have any good relationships with any national leaders.
So you're unaware the next 2 months what Durham and Comey report and Horowitz are going to do? Are going to drop?
Forget those fools. Let's talk about what really matters.
This is what's going to happen. You're going to be seeing this for the next 2 years, Jay, but I know you're just you're not going to
okay,
want to
okay, if you lose
to.
The bet, you're buying me a house. Because 1 year from now, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren will be swearing in as president.
Here's the difference. You got ISIS members beheading soldiers, support groups of the American government and whatnot. You know, they're mainly just soldiers. You know, they behead them. Yeah, wherever they capture, right? That's ISIS. But then you got Saudi Arabia government beheading their people. And the U.S. government, what did they do? So they support Saudi Arabia, give them what. They just barely gave them more airplanes and more military equipment to Saudi Arabia. So they support Saudi Arabia, and they're okay
the
with whatever they do.
The thing about Saudi Arabia is we're unlikely bedfellows, and Saudi Arabia will compromise their values to keep America in bed with them.
Yeah, but I'm just showing the double standards. America is against ISIS. And they show ISIS video on American TV showing ISIS beheading people. Bet they don't bother to show Saudi Arabia beheading people. Instead, they just support them. So that's double standards right there.
I agree. We have 1 minute left. Somebody, go ahead and talk. I'm doing the review.
That's what I was saying earlier.
Yeah.
Go for it, Don. Well, I think we're our next show. We should start exploring some of these things. By the way, there's a famous, not super famous actor, but a guy who killed himself. He was into QAnon, and he jumped off a bridge, and a truck hit him. And he was going to out some people regarding pedophilia in Hollywood, including Seth Green. He wrote a very long memo about it. You might do a little research on that. That's very interesting. Are we still there?
Well, that's what I was talking about, why I left. Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about why I left Hollywood. I mean, these people are sick, ill people that the public reveres. You're paying them $1 million a year salary millions of dollars to people who are pedophiles in cults, all kinds of killings and murders just for sex, and you know that